Good morning.
Good morning.
When you think back to when you were a teenager, try and do that for just a moment. Some of you don't want to. Some of you look back really fondly. If you were asked a question about how much your family understood you, what would you say? If you were asked how much fun you had with your family, what would you say? But what do you think possibly were you able to say most of the time, yeah, I have fun with my family understands me, that might have been a good thing? Probably. So let's explore that with Latino youth as it relates to substance use. Let's see what we can find. We really are here because we care about promoting health. We don't necessarily know always what those best strategies are. We continue to struggle with how can we recruit, how can we sustain programs, how can they really fit with the people we're trying to serve. Let's have a little dialogue about that this morning. Simply to provide a little bit of context, I give you some demographics that we probably already know. The Latino community, the Latino population is young, they're fast growing. They'll be a leading influence, a leading contributor to the health status of the United States. Let me also remind us that when we refer to Latino as a population or Hispanic as a population, it is not one entity, and most of us in this room are aware of that. We recognize it, we appreciate it, but we need to remind ourselves and say it a few times. There is so much diversity and beauty in the Latino population, and keep that in mind. So it's interesting that we would focus on substance use because really if you look at the national trends, the Latino youth are somewhat in the middle, right? We heard mention of this yesterday in the opening session that minority youth generally aren't using substances at the levels that non-minority youth are. Yet it still matters if youth are using alcohol, drugs, smoking. We don't want them doing that, right? So just because they're in the middle doesn't mean let's ignore them. But I just want to give a little bit of context that, we're not at the end, at the super high level. We're not at the super low level here. Also, I recognize that with illegal drug use, Latino youth do show some more concerning trends. And I don't have those data presented here because they weren't questions asked on our survey. So I can't really talk about them much, but I would point out that if you look at especially 8th and 9th grade use of marijuana, use of some of these drugs, it's concerning. Those are more concerning. I point out females because those were the gals were the ones that were in my study. And, I just want to point out that there are a few interesting differences here in the literature that the girls are really wanting to use drugs to be happier, to be more relaxed, which is very consistent with what we know about Latino adolescent girls, especially their depressive symptoms, twice as likely to report being depressed than non-Latino ninth grade girls, for example, higher rates of suicidal ideation. So this is consistent with that. They're also more likely than males, which I found interesting, to move from a use to abuse. So I can't explain that, I don't know why, but it's out there, and we could have an interesting conversation about why that might be. There could be some genetic things going on hormonally, who knows, we don't know, but it's interesting. And then also there's this point in the literature that females are more influenced by family. So I would argue probably influenced if family members are using, but equally influenced if family members are not. So that's where I'll go with this. And we do care about substance use because, of course, it's associated with so many other risk behaviors, risk patterns, and problems. Interestingly, and those of us that are women in the room, we know this, so many prevention programs are targeted toward males when we look at delinquency, substance use, some of these violent behaviors, for example, we tend to look at the males. But and females are often overlooked. So I would argue that we do need to look at the unique factors going on in the lives of our girls and how we can, what we need to do to prevent use among them. I also want to point out protective factors because that's why I'm here. I'm really about protective factors, promoting those for these youth and looking at how they are related to the problem behaviors that we see in their lives. So we know that family is a significant influence, most likely for all youth, particularly strong for Latino youth. And this links to some of the cultural values, of course. But, you know, family matters. Family is really big. So Latino youth, boys and girls, have been shown to be really influenced by family conflict, certainly by the role modeling of parents, parents that are disengaged or away from, not so involved in the youth's lives. And then we also have an interesting phenomenon, I guess, of extreme overprotection in the Latino community. And I have, you know, my friend is a parent of a 15-year-old, a Latino boy, and he was going to go out for Halloween, and she had to be home, and he had to be, his friends all had to be there in their house, because why? We can watch, we can see exactly what's going on and what they're doing, right? So regardless of age, there's going to be that sense of overprotection and probably a very real protectiveness. And again, with the heterogeneity of the population, when you have recent immigrant families, and those are many of the ones that I work alongside, they're even more protective of their girls, because the girls want to go to the mall, but the parents don't know how to ride the bus, the parents don't know where they're going, the parents aren't able to speak the language. So there are many factors contributing to even more protection perceived by these girls. So I'm looking at family factors and protection, but I'm looking at it in the context of some level of balance, and you know, hopefully looking at a relationship of family protection and prevention of substance use. That's why we're here. So what we did, we were actually doing a mental health promotion intervention, which is interesting because we just heard about an intervention to promote mental health by not specifically targeting mental health. And in this case, we really were doing a mental health, mental well-being intervention. And we recruited girls from two high schools. I'm only presenting baseline data because we were randomizing them to intervention and control, so it wouldn't make sense to look at outcomes related to substance use and family connectedness. At this point, the sample size was not large. And in fact, there were only 42 girls that self-selected to be part of this study. There were about 100 who were eligible in the high school. I was only looking for ninth or 10th graders. And you know, so out of the 100, we did get 40-some that did participate, which was really nice. They completed a survey, and we'll look at some of those data now. Let me show you the measures that we used. I pretty much took the connectedness measures that exist on our Ad Health survey. We also in Minnesota have a Minnesota Student Survey, and these connectedness items are also very similar, so the wording is there. Now, I put mother and father connectedness together on the slide because it fits, but on the survey, they're separate, right? So most of the time, your mother is warm and loving toward you. You answer that. You answer all four items for your mother, then you answer all four items for your father, then you answer these three items for family connectedness. And I would point out here that when I present later on mean scores, you can see that for the mother-father connectedness, you have a range from 0 to 5 times 4, 20, right? And for family connectedness, you have a score ranging from 0 to 15. And this is important because you'll see family connectedness mean scores around 8 compared to mean scores around 12, and you might think, oh my gosh, they don't think they're having any fun with their families, when in fact our range is different, okay? And then with smoking and alcohol use, again, I just took a few items from other existing national or state-level surveys. How old were you when you first smoked a whole cigarette for the first time, and then an equivalent for alcohol? And then we tried to get at regular use by asking the in the last 30 days question, which in itself is somewhat problematic, because how many teens really reflect back on what they did in the past 30 days and try and quantify how much they've done? But that's what we currently do to our teens. We did associations, and that's what I'll present here. And this is a sidebar. I'm looking into a model to do text messaging in the moment data collection, and I think that would be a fun conversation with some of the folks in this room, because I really feel it's the way to go to really capture what's going on with our youth especially. I also looked at a few confounders. Just again, we don't have the sample size to do anything super elaborate, but I, you know, if you think about theoretically what can influence or have an effect on a relationship between family, mother, father connectedness and substance use, well, you might assume that peer connectedness could have an impact. You might think that language use as a quasi-proxy for acculturation, with all the limitations that that means, could have an influence as well, for some of the reasons I mentioned earlier related to acculturation and comfort. And then living with both parents, again, that can have an influence of how close you're going to feel to a parent if you're not even living with one. So we looked at those as well. Now here are my participants, what they looked like. We had the 42 girls, mean age around 14, so we're not talking about a super old group here. About half were U.S. born, half Mexican born. There was one gal who was from a Central American country. 45, about half of them lived with both parents. I give you a few other indicators just to give you a sense of what these girls were thinking. You know, less than half of them indicated that their health status was good or very good on a 5 options. So many were hanging around the poor, not so great, which is kind of interesting. 60% felt that they were about the right weight when they're asked a question, do you feel overweight, underweight, in the middle, which, you know, it just gives you a sense of where their head is at. And then, interestingly enough, 3 out of 4 felt that they had as much money as other families kind of that they hang with. But, of course, 1/4 felt not that they had more money, that they had less money. So, you know, giving you a little bit of context when we don't ask them to report things like income levels. 2 out of 3 reported they had never smoked, which is positive to me, considering these are 14-year-olds and who knows what's happening, you know, what they're being exposed to. What was not so exciting to me was that 42% only reported that they had never drank. So over half had reported that they had some level of drinking. And again, we can talk about why this is, and is there a level of cultural acceptability around alcohol that doesn't exist around tobacco. In some groups, that certainly is the case. So in terms of regular use, you can see my range here, fewer, or a quasi-measure for regular use. Fewer reported smoking in the past 30 days, as well as alcohol consumption in the last 30 days. Thank you. So these are raw numbers, but they give you a sense of the age that they had at first use. On the far left, you see that most of them, again, had not reported not using, many of them. But you can see the age range does go from the 8 to the 15 or 16. And it concerns me that we see what's going on with our 8 through 12-year-olds. It's just, for me, it's not a happy thing, having an 8-year-old myself. So now we look at factors that are associated with our connectedness measures, and here what we're looking at are the potential confounders on the substance use connectedness relationship. And I would point out, in your columns of high and low connectedness, you have, really, the groups are pretty similar. So, for example, if your connectedness with mother, your high group, felt comfortable with speaking Spanish, so did pretty much the folks in the low connectedness. We don't see a big difference here in terms of language use, living with parent status, and whether or not you're reporting high or low, you're in the group of high or low connectedness for mother and father and for family. What is different is the peer connectedness and the mother connectedness relationship. So we did see a big difference. If you report a high level of connectedness with your mother, you are way more likely to also be reporting a high level of peer connectedness. I have no idea why. It's an association, but it's something to ponder. So now we have the associations between the family connectedness and substance use, kind of the meat or the tofu of the message, I guess. And what you see here, most of the relationships don't show anything significant. I could argue right away it doesn't matter. We have a low sample size. We need a bigger sample. We can't pick out anything because the measures just aren't robust enough, right? But what we do find that even with our small sample size, what jumps out? Mother connectedness matters. I can't tell you why. I think I know why. I'm a mom. But it matters. And it matters especially for the smoking behaviors. It didn't come out for the drinking behaviors. So we can explore why and we can talk about it, but you see that the girls who are not smoking, they're reporting that they're not smoking regularly or ever, they're more likely to report a higher level of connectedness to their mothers. Interestingly enough, the girls were reporting pretty high levels of connectedness with dad too, which was nice. In a lot of my studies, a fair amount of the girls will report dad's not in the picture. But in this case, they reported closeness. So even with migration patterns, there's a way to be close. So I have a few points that I just want to raise for discussion. I've already made a couple of them. Despite our small sample size, mother connectedness does seem to matter. This is really consistent with the literature. If you look at Zayas's recent work with suicidal attempts and maternal mutuality, feeling the, do you know what maternal mutuality is? The sense of the girl can put herself in her mom's shoes. He has shown that this makes a huge difference, that if you can put yourself in your mom's shoes, and vice versa, that girl is less likely to attempt suicide. It's very fascinating. That mother-daughter relationship really does seem to matter. I do raise the point or the potential consideration that, this our findings related to smoking and alcohol, they may reflect, again, cultural values and differences and messages that families bring to the youth about not smoking, not using drugs. Maybe the messages aren't quite as strong as it relates to alcohol use. Hard to know. And then a few more points. I do think that also, even though I don't talk a lot about my intervention, I'd be happy to another time, the intervention is school-based, it is family-centric, and I do think that our findings, even associations, point to a need for our interventions, our health-promoting strategies to involve family. And while this talk is about Latino youth, it's true for all youth. We need to involve family members. We need to bring back that value of connecting to family, of really reinforcing the strength and the protection that family can offer. Of course, that doesn't hold true for all families. There are risk factors in some family contexts, but generally, a solid relationship with a caring, connected adult really makes a difference. Obviously, we need more research, and I'd be happy to talk more about that another time with people. I think that's all I want to say. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah.